Hello everyone, that's beautiful Castle Bay, you know, that's who we are. There are 8 of us trying to improve and protect environmental health at Castle Bay. I want to get the thank yous up first, because I may run out of time. But these people really helped us a lot, and I want to make sure to thank them so that they know we appreciate what they've done for us. And the bottom half are interns, the top half are pretty much in the room. So, what started us on acidification is actually nitrogen. We are working on nitrogen and nitrogen issues, and then when we saw Mark's paper that had this picture in it with the cobalt in 3As going from what you see on the left to what you see on the right, and reading about pH and pH, what pH does to shellfish and omega, etc., we wondered what is actually happening in Casco Bay. What are the pHs on the flats, and can we correlate this? Because we do, anecdotally, we have a lot of nitrogen coming into Casco Bay. That means it's very productive, but it also means things are happening, as they are in other places on the coast, like green slime, an indication of nitrogen pollution actually showing up on plant flats. So in 2011, it took us a couple of years after you noticed Mark's paper was in 2009, this is what we decided to do. We wanted to see how we could test pH on plant flats because there is not an instrument made to do that, directly to do that, and get ourselves organized and write quacks and get them approved, etc. So what we did was we went to the towns for first. We got some extra help. These are interns or undergraduates that you'll see. We feel we're training them to be grad students. You know, you use them and abuse them, so that's what we did. And that's Liz, he helped us out a lot. We went to the towns, to clamors, to shellfish commissions, to all the people around Casco Bay, and we put together a list of productive plant flats showing green and non-productive, but recently productive plant flats. The list is much larger than this, but this is the 14 stations we're able to get to by August of 2011. Had done all our testing and comparison, etc. And these were the results. We went there, we went to one spot on each flat, mid-tide, mid-flat. We did 10 replicates of pH, and this was our pilot screening program. We feel that these pHs, I personally feel, especially on the productive flats, are a little high. We have several reasons and contributing factors why that might be, but still, this is a statistically significant difference. It told us what we thought we were going to find out. I know it's always dangerous to think what you're going to find out, but it did. So that gave us the gumption to go forward. The next year, while we had talked to all the people you saw, and we had worked with Mark Green a lot on selection of a pH meter, we also had this goal in mind of maybe we can develop a method that other people can use up and down the coast. And by other people, I mean some organization of clamors or a bays committee or shellfish committee or whatever. So we wanted to keep it affordable. We did a lot of testing of terrific, small, inexpensive digital pH meters. They would not work for this. So we went from our $400 pH meter to the $800 pH meter that Mark uses in the field. We wanted to do a lot more flats, and we wanted to add some the sediment organic content analyses with Larry Mayer's help, because again, we think it's nitrogen driving this. I mean, that's the take-home message from what I have to say. We're talking about ocean acidification. What Friends of Casco Bay would like you to hear is about coastal acidification. We make that difference because we feel the acidification we're seeing on plant flats in Casco Bay is nitrogen. It is organic content. It is, as Joe Salisbury very eloquently said, it's that stuff rotting. So that's what we wanted to get at. So we did the water. We do water and temperature, water pH and temperature, just way in, right proximal to where we're going to sample the mud. Then we did pH and ORP, and we took samples for percent carbon, nitrogen, and sediment superficial area, and sent those off to Larry. And these are pictures you can see checking the water. This is the correct probe angle for doing the sediment with this probe. You have to get on this one two different orifices into the mud, and the only way to do that is this way. And it takes a little practice. So we did a lot of, we learned from all those people with PhD after the name, and then we took what we feel is an even more conservative approach. We're very, very focused on calibration, cleaning, maintenance, etc. For instance, after we stick that probe in the mud, it's already been calibrated, five times, we clean it and we recalibrate it at 3 points. And we do that. As a program, again, we continue to do that. Oh, this is a proud moment for us. This is Jessie. She came to us from Bowdoin. She's now at the University of Alaska doing graduate work on ocean acidification. She was a language major. Very bright language major, but when we say you give people cold and wet, you get them committed. sampling the mud on this increased sampling side. Here we're taking the samples to send to Larry. We're just scraping the top 1 to 2 millimeters because we're interested in where the spats settle. And we put that in a jar and sent it off to Larry. I have to tell you, I was delighted. This is a stainless steel parfait spoon or sampling. $2.39 for a dozen. It's the cheapest thing I ever bought to do anything in science or the marine environment. These are the 30 flats that we sampled that year, just to get the green on the productive, the red on the non-productive. I'm sorry that the order switched, but these are, again, statistically significant results. The productive plant flat always had higher pH than the non-productive plant flat. What we learned that year, we now felt that we could do accurate and repeatable pH measurements on a plant flat. We found some very low sediment pH values, talking about 6.4. You know, think about what we've learned this morning and what that means for a change in acidity. And also from Mark's work, which I don't know if he'll mention this or not, but you know, you can hear it twice. You start seeing impact at some pH of 7.8 with larval or spat shellfish. And he found complete dissolution at 6.8. We found, and that was in the lab where he could control the pH, we found in the wild some 6.4. I've mentioned that. And from when we got the values back from Larry and looked at those with the pHs, if it's a high pH, it had low percent carbon, percent nitrogen content. But the other way around, if it had a low pH, that correlated very strongly with high nitrogen, high carbon, high organic content, things that could be decomposing or rotting in and on the sediment. And we don't want to do with the low pH values have relatively high oxygen reduction potentials, but it was on the meter, so we used it. So last year, we said, all right, we've gone over the plant flats, some of the plant flats in Casco Bay. We have an idea now what the ranges of pHs are around the bay. But we need to focus more on one plant flat to see if we can learn some more. So we picked one flat. We did two transects from high tide to low tide, or high water mark to low water mark. We followed the water. That's one of our protocols. We only do pH at the water's edge. Other experiments we have done show that once that mud is uncovered, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half hour, the pH is changing. And we want to have a common basis for our experiment so we could compare the results. We did it 7 different times. This lab, we went to those transects, measured all 5 stations 7 times during the summer. I would also note that we didn't go to the exact same spot where we have been walking the last one. We had a clock face around a center point, and we went to a different piece of that pie, if you will, each time, not walking on the other one. And these flats were not open, this flat was not open to families, so, and we didn't see warming activity, so we don't think there was a lot of traffic there. Also, last year we wanted to get some plants back in the mud, again, a pilot study, see what we can find out, and see if we can further figure out a good way to do that. We wanted to find out the all-important question, is our pH readings comparable, connected to the omega aragonite that Joe talked about and considered so important. And through a board member who happens to have the access to these things at the University of England, we are in the process of doing a DNA study of the nitrifying bacteria, looking at the ratios of those in that sediment that we collected. So, a couple more people for us to abuse. This is the study site. It's in Freeport, Recompense Cove. And you see the stippling? This is from the DMR data layer of clam habitat. That stippling shows up rather large here, but it doesn't mean anything. So this is the flat, this outline. And these are our transects. The station's about 250 feet apart from high water and low water. And this line is put on by the town of Freeport. This is productive plant flat. This is what they consider non-productive plant flat. You'll notice, I don't know how well you can see it, but this dark area is eelgrass. It's now all gone. But that may have, the fact that the roots are here, may have affected the pH values for that station. They're a little different now. These represent our five stations. The pH at the high tide mark at this average value, but high, let's call it, it's not a great pH, but just for that study, this was high. Drops just a little bit as you move down the flat. It's what I would call significantly lower in the middle of the flat, a little bit lower still the further down the flat you go. Then there's a little bump up. And we don't know, it could be a million reasons why. What we could observe was the sediment there was different because of the leftover roots from eelgrass. And also, I wanted to mention something to Joe. Joe showed earlier a graph that as the temperature goes up, the pH goes up. Right, Joe? Yeah, at a certain omega. What we think we saw over the summer, and this is from June through September, October, and we had some really hot days this summer. And yes, Joe?
So, in fact, it is right. There needs to be clarification on that. So what I'm saying is, if you have a parcel of water and you increase the temperature, that CO2 will go up and it will strip off. You know, it will get out of the water and jump into the atmosphere. So we actually got less dissolved inorganic carbon, and that will be favorable for organisms. If you cool water, you have a tendency to take in more carbon dioxide, and that will increase acidity. So you're talking about relatively short-term changes, which have the effect of being opposite of what I was saying up there. I was talking about longer-term.
Right. So that's why I want to use it. That's why I want to use it. In the variability that we see around these, is we noticed that starting in the spring, let's just say temperature is relatively low, pH is higher. And as you go through the season, which is not shown here, this is the average of all of them, in the warm and hot July sampling, the pHs are lower. And there was a curve. And Mike in the back room, my colleague here, can talk more about this, but that there's a nice curve of a relationship of pH and temperature. So, we did put some spat in the mud, and we're still waiting for that analysis because we're getting scanning electron microscope pictures, micrographs. From that, we don't have those yet, but Courtney, who who did that work, did a separate study for a class at Bowdoin, and this is from her paper, and it's too bad, you know, these aren't the same size, they're the same magnification, but this is a control plan, a small stat, from a location with a higher PA, and this is one which I think she zoomed in on, which was so interesting, because this is all pitting. This is from a lower pH flat, and you can, they would state it's cold recommendations, et cetera. This is 19 days, and there's pitting, and then here is a scanning electron, a picture of that pitting. And we're hoping to get a lot more of this data, but it's very tedious to mount, clean those and mount those into the picture. So where we're left at the end of this season is we want to get those pictures from the plants that we did put out, and we harvested them after 1 day, 4 days, 7 days. We have some initial results in that people have seen some, but we don't have the pictures yet, and we get pitting on a low pH flat after 1 day. We also are waiting. Joe and Mark are still working on the data that we need to do that comparison, but we don't lock our pH to the calcium carbonate saturation. And we're also still waiting for the nitrogen bacteria ratio. A lot of work has gone forward on all of these areas. We just don't have final results here like this close. Wish we could have them today. And last, I want to thank Mike Jones, who's sitting at the troublemakers table in the back. This is his best side. And Mike is our research director, and he supervised all of this work. So, under 10 minutes.
So, any quick questions for Joe before we switch to Mark Reed for the research?
So, just remember, coastal acidification, nutrient-driven, it's what's happening inshore in Casco Bay. And when you have pHs of 6.4 or 7.5, we're not talking about pHs of 8.1 or a change from 8.2 to 8.1 or whatever. This is dramatic and important.
So I have a question about variability in the top 5 to 10 centimeters, the difference between the measurements that you're getting in the stomach. Do you guys have a handle on how variable that pH measurement is in the stomach?
No, we don't. We stay to that top. And, you know, you notice if you're on the flat, scraping, digging, whatever, the horizons in the mud, it changed dramatically down to black and oxic. But we just wanted what the plant's fat would be initially exposed to.
But I mean, in the institute, the ones that you're doing are pH probes, not the sediment that you're collecting.
Yeah, no, it changed. We only measure pH from the top 2 millimeters.
It had a standard pH profile. He didn't measure depth profile as the surface, one point.
Okay.
But all muds are very standard. The oxic zone, the pH decreases dramatically in the surface water, and then it just starts to creep up when you're producing alkalinity essentially from sulfate reduction. So that's where the mud starts to change color, the pH starts to really back up.
Alright, should we switch then? Oh,
no.
One quick one, and then we'll have
some
at the end, too.
This is a brief question. If you could elaborate very briefly on that molecular study, the genetic study.
Yeah, well, I figured I'd be able to lean on all these docs for the answers. I don't know, but Dan's not here. But he has a very sophisticated DNA laboratory, and they have... they know the DNA of a lot of different species, which amazes me, but he can pull the DNA from the mainly three species, I think, of microbial bacteria and look at that ratio compared to total in the mud, and he's going to do that for us.
Who is it?
I put you, it's Dr. Dan Brazeau, and he's at the University of New England. Thank you.